And I forgot to tell you that Herbert Hart is from a Katzenelbogen family. He has an uncle.
But are there any Katzenelbogens in Germany?
Pardon?
Are there any Katzenelbogens?
There were.
In Germany, yes, but in the 19th century, were
there? Yes. I mean, it's a family that goes back to Padova.
In Russia, there are plenty.
And in Germany. I mean, I'm not sure about the 19th century. We'll check. You can...
Doesn't matter anyway.
I mean, Herbert's uncle established all the genealogy.
His name was Tzadik, wasn't it? His grandfather's name was... great-grandfather was Tzadik.
Of whom? Of Herbert?
Herbert, yes. The name is Tzadik, not Katzenelbogen.
Yes, I know.
And it comes from Magdeburg.
The Katzenelbogen is the Iches there. Because Katzenelbogen was a famous rabbi in Padova in the 15th to 16th century.
Yes.
And it went back there, and that's why his uncle, who is an Orthodox Jew from Sheffield...
Oh, I know.
You know, he's a nuisance. But he produced a book and so on and so forth. And I could at least prove it that he was right. I checked the history of Padova.
All these people are always quite identically correct.
Yeah. Now...
Katzenelbogen, yes. The only one I knew was very remote from Padova.
Yeah.
The Spogundi Yiddish.
Now, the question is whether the Katzenelbogens that we know in Israel are from Russia or from Germany. Probably Russia.
Not Germany.
And
there are no Katzenelbogens in Germany.
No. I know a family that came from Russia, and I'll check. And as I told you, there was the most distinguished dermatologist in Hadassah in the 30s and 40s was a Katzenelbogen. I'll see what was his name. He probably one of those who came from Russia and studied in Germany, like all the best physicians.
I was trying to remember his first name.
I'll find it.
I knew it once. Yes.
However... some odd questions that remain from the... I think that when I first asked you about your mother, you tried to minimize a role,
As Antigone?
It can't be that she didn't press you, let's say, in studies or...
Oh, she certainly didn't.
She didn't?
No.
You repeated.
No.
Because saw her...
If anyone objected to my father, who was not a strong character, he would be very disappointed that I didn't do well. My mother had no idea. She did not take an interest.
Not like...
I assure you, she didn't. Of course, I was the apple of her eye.
Yes.
She thought I was wonderful.
And yet she was...
She never pushed me.
I wouldn't believe it.
Never pushed me.
Interesting.
In any degree.
Because when I met
like
her...
She's like a Jewish mother.
You can see why I thought
so. Absolutely. She's like a Jewish mother in New York.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, never. My father used to lecture me. From the need to work. When I came, very, he would read the report. My mother wouldn't read the report. My father would read the report and said, this is very bad. Why can you not work too hard and so on? My mother... It was not proposed. I would never lecture my mother.
Yeah.
Never.
Yes. Now, when you say that they criticized you, on the other hand, you got the second prize in English the second year you were in England.
First year.
In the first year. Which means sometimes you didn't count as the best.
Yes, sometimes, yes.
But
in general, what I mean is I was never bad.
Yeah.
I never get bottom.
Yes.
I used to come 7th, 6th, 5th. I wasn't particularly near the top with it because I didn't work, of course. By nature, I'm idle.
Yeah. That I can see.
Sometimes I did.
Yeah.
Even as the things I used to work at, mind you, St. Paul's was a cramming school. It gave too much work.
You thought.
It still is. So I did more work than I wanted to. I cheated in my kind of radial. I used... Cribs translations. I never learned Latin or Greek properly because I cheated quite definitely. I used to go to Charing Cross Road, where all these second-hand bookshops were, and whatever they all did, and used to buy literal translations of the classics which I used. That's why I never became an Latin scholar or a Greek scholar. Because I couldn't bear the drudgery.
I
had no talent for languages.
From the very beginning, apparently, you were not taken neither, let's say, by Latin or Greek, or earlier by Talmud. I mean, this kind of
scholarship
never.
I was never a scholar. No, let me remove that. I was never a scholar. Of any kind.
That's the matter of definition, of course.
No.
We'll come to
I was never a scholar in the sense of being erudite.
Yeah.
I was never a scholar in the sense of the minutiae. I never, so to speak, I used to make general propositions.
Yeah.
There are always some exceptions.
Yeah.
I used to make sweeping things. Ideas I was always interested in.
Yes.
But I was not a scholar in the proper sense, ever. I'm not now, I never have been.
All right, that we'll discuss at length. But what's interesting here is...
When I was asked whether I wanted to be president of the British Academy, I said I was unsuitable, because the British Academy devoted to scholarship. Nobody could say I was a scholar. And then I said that in 1973.
Yes, but we'll come back.
I meant it.
I know. I mean, you repeat it. It's not the first time you told me. But what's more interesting in this context is that you had a strong character, because it's very good when you are older and you have formed your opinions of life and yourself, and you decide, I'm not going to waste my time on Greek grammar.
There was no such decision.
When you were a child...
There was no such decision.
Pardon?
There was no such decision.
Not decision, but reaction. I mean, your natural reaction from the very day that you were a child.
Because I wasn't good at it, that's all. The only reason.
But you were able.
Not a decision.
No. But you were able.
But
I mean, you could force yourself.
Yes, but superficial, in certain ways.
All right, but in school, you could...
The man who taught me Latin in Riga in 1900 and... 19. It was a few months when we were there, with a man called Professor Kupfer. He compared me to Leonard Shapiro, who we liked, and said I was too superficial.
Yes,
I would never have been in the good pupil to a real German school.
No,
never.
But,
in the German school, I would have done very badly.
Yes, but let's
I'll tell
say,
you what I did, Lord. Let me tell you the truth. I did not want to come too low in examinations, because I was ashamed. I had no ambition. But I didn't want to compete. I never thought I'd better than so-and-so. I've never in my life been too uncompetitive, too uncompetitive in some ways. Because I didn't have that motive
to
thrust me forward, you see.
Yes.
But since I was ashamed of failing, which I permanently am, and I get worried about the possibility of failure, which is always there, I assumed I shall fail. I've never yet said to myself, no, I can do that easily. That I can do, you suppose. Do that very well. Never. And that's not modesty, but lack of confidence. It's something quite different. It's not such an estimable quality. Before examination, I used to cram, used to work very hard. The last fortnight, or the last 3 weeks in Oxford School, I worked tremendously actively. What I remembered then, I put into the papers. My memory was never very good in the scholarly sense of the word, never. I only knew what I crammed up, what I learned up in those last weeks. That I used to pour out and then forget immediately. That was my method.
Yeah.
It worked.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't too stupid to do that. But let me tell you, the idea of steady scholarship, doing so much work a day, I was never systematic. And I could never do any work until the last moment. That's in general true. If I was ordered to write an article or review, it's always in bounds. First, nothing at all, not in preparation, reading books, but rather casually, and then agonized rush, so to speak, and sort of complete 12 hours a day sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I would dictate this in a kind of hysterical way, the last bit.
Right.
I would have 4 or 5 hours, which I did the whole job in one. What I couldn't do, quiet, steady accumulation of a sort of balanced and rational kind.
Yeah.
That is my temperament.
Yes, I can see what you mean. And it matters a lot in your observation to this day, and you'll come back to it once a week.
Right.
But in your childhood, let's say that your mother would have pressed you more, or your father would have pressed you more.
He never pressed me really
much. But he didn't.
Whenever a report arrived,
very interesting,
which was not too good,
yeah,
I would be told I really must, as it were, try and do better. Full stop. I then wasn't told, go and do your work.
Yeah.
Don't waste your time.
Yeah.
Go upstairs. Look, you haven't got any time. You're doing too well. Would you mind? I really think you ought to go and do some work. None of that. Ever.
No. And yet, Hebrew, you remember better than one could expect, because you studied it, let's say, all right.
Anything went on in childhood.
Yeah, and yet there were probably two or three decades that you didn't speak Hebrew.
No, I never
speak Hebrew. Then when you came back to Israel, you would speak from time to time a little bit,
yes.
And it always comes to you, the second day you are in Israel, you can speak Hebrew.
Not really.
Yeah, I mean, all right, not but really. You were never accomplished. I mean, how much did you study Hebrew?
Yeah.
I mean, something...
Something goes back, but not it's exactly the same as German, which I knew until the age of three.
Mm-hmm.
When I go to Germany, I can more or less speak. I can. Ungrammatically, wrongly, like enough words. You see? But I don't speak it. I don't. In no serious sense. And I don't understand it when it's spoken to me. I just don't.
Now,
when I go to a party, people speak Hebrew, no good.
Now, the fact that you were a descendant of the Schneerson.
Yes.
Was it mentioned to you by your teachers, the Jewish teachers?
Never.
You are,
never.
And you ought to be.
Never.
How
never.
Come that you don't
never.
Start?
Never.
Is it because it's the Hasidim that don't
they
mind?
Didn't know.
I didn't know.
I didn't tell them. Did I pay no attention to it?
Yeah. And
it did not play a part in my life.
Yeah.
I never felt I was
like
a Miuchas.
I'm also a descendant of a very important rabbi. I was not aware of it until...
I was aware of it.
Yeah,
you
were, yes.
But it meant nothing.
Yeah.
I didn't live in that world.
And it didn't mean to your parents too.
Probably more.
No, but from the point of view, you are Isaiah...
No.
It's very interesting.
You come from a single family.
Yes, and you have to...
Never.
No.
Never.
No.
And they didn't feel it about themselves.
No.
They knew they were.
No.
There was no excessive pride. None.
Yeah. How interesting.
No.
It's the same in my family.
No,
now, but the Lubavitchers are very missionary, very efficient. They know every descendant of the rabbi.
Yes.
Did they, and you became a distinguished man.
Of course.
Didn't they try to approach you?
Yes, of course. I mean, they in London, they did.
When?
10 years ago. I mean, not before.
Not before.
When they do know how long they've been... They founded a thing in London.
I mean, their intelligence service is better than the Mossad.
It's not very bad. I occur in the book. Beit Rabbi is a genealogy from Shneur Zalman onwards. In that I occur.
Yes.
So they wouldn't need to make deep conclusions.
Exactly.
Deep research.
Yeah.
I'm called Zuckerman Berlin. Correctly. And I occur in the tree.
Yes.
And of course, Shazar knew all about it and so on. And from London, from time to time, I used to get letters from them in London, ask me to deliver a lecture, come and see them.
Unlike them, not to try to bring you back to the camp, like they do with so many scientists.
No,
unlike them, not to send you Matzah Shmura before Pesach.
Somebody did want to send me Matzah Shmura. But not from London, then.
From Israel. Maybe if you were in
from Israel. Maybe.
Yeah, there is somebody who...
No, there was somebody who pursued me. There was a Hasid,
yes,
who was a relation, who was himself descended, whose name was, I think, Ladier, because that's the alternative name of Shneur Zalman.
Ladier.
There are two families.
Ladi
was the place he came from.
Of course, Shneur Zalman not from Ladi.
Miladi.
So it's Ladier.
Rav Miladi.
I never heard
Ladier.
Ladier.
So in Jerusalem,
how interesting.
There are people in Jerusalem that name. That's an alternative branch. Some are called Schneerson, and some are called Ladier.
Yes.
They're
some
all
first.
Legitimately descended.
Yes.
You see? Ladier was an alternative name.
And
there was a man there who used to try and see me and so on. He was a terrible bore, frightful nuisance.
Yes.
And he used to come to the King David Hotel. And I finally got used to send Aline to talk to him.
I
finally got rid of him.
it's rather incredible. I mean,
they never ask for money.
Because you see, with the
they don't ask for money.
No, yeah. Their money they get from other people.
Right.
No, I mean,
no,
using your name. It's interesting that the rabbi didn't want to meet you.
Express no wish to meet you.
Ever. That's very interesting.
He knows they exist, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
Because they do.
He knows everything that is of importance.
He obviously thinks it's, he's been told no use, probably.
But that's very interesting.
Somebody must have said, and he was too proud, I'm sure, too proud to do anything. So he didn't want to be stumped.
Yeah.
And he would have been. I would not have gone
to see him. I mean, when there is a... It never takes risks.
For example, the ambassador of Israel in London was colossally impressed by it. Went to see him and said, it was wonderful. He repeated word for word his conversation with him to me.
The incumbent one.
Incumbent.
Well, he's a religious, he's a Manchester.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know.
Yes.
He's not a Hasid.
No, he's not.
But at the same time, he went to see him with terribly, he thought it was a genius. He said marvelous things to him. The metaphors he used, he was overcome.
You know that in 66 when I was
in New York, for me. Yes.
I thought of going to see him. I mean, I had friends, members of Knesset, who were...
Out of curiosity.
I got a letter from Batya. I shall never speak with you if you will go to
him. Really? Because of what they're
doing? Because of his missionary etiquette. She hated his missionary... And she...
You know what he said to Shadar? Shadar said, why didn't you come to Israel? Invite him. When he was in New York, remember?
Yes, I remember.
Well, he didn't go and see him. Because he was still not.
Yes, but then...
He didn't see him.
But then he went to see him. Shadar and created a scandal.
That's what I thought.
That the
president
of Israel would not...
I was told that didn't happen. I was told that he was telephoned.
Goldap told him not to, and he couldn't resist it. It was Goldap.
He did go.
Goldap
was. He did go. I was told he had a telephone to him.
And he's very...
No, I'm sure he went.
Yeah. He couldn't resist.
There was a scandal, I think.
And he created...
Of course. Yes. The president is going to see him.
Yeah. And brought him a bottle of wine.
Passed nicht. He was exactly wrong. Anyway, what happened then was he invited him to Israel, to which the rabbis had a certain degree of prudence. Don't press me to come. I'll only do harm. From your point of view, it's very undesirable that I should come. You can imagine the kind of things I'll say. Yeah. I'm far less dangerous to you here.
When I'm here.
Shows he has certain sense.
He's very short.
Must be.
Very charismatic.
He must be.
Very educated. He has his study fields, you know, he has...
Well, it's about some degree in
engineering. He studied in Paris. That's why But he is not the son of the previous rabbi, but the nephew.
He's a son-in-law.
Yeah, and there is no problem of the...
I think he's son-in-law,
no? No. I
think he may marry the daughter.
Either this or nephew. And now there is a problem of...
No, he's related. Certainly related. But...
I think he is his nephew. I think so. But...
I know he's not the son.
He hasn't got a son. And the problem of the Yerushalayim...
Succession.
In the Middle Ages.
Gurari there was. There was a rabbi's brother-in-law who was called Gurari.
He wanted somebody to succeed him who married his niece. And he's a scientist in Weizmann, Mahon Weizmann, but this one...
Hold on.
Pardon?
What is his name?
I can't remember.
Not Schneerson.
Not Schneerson. He married the
But he's not himself by his own.
No, but the rabbi prefers him, but the young boy doesn't want to carry the burden.
But he's pious.
Pardon?
He is pious.
But he's not going to accept it, and to the disappointment of the rabbi, and the problem is still looming there on the court. All right. Now...
I can't say that I'm deeply worried.
The last question is about relations with going when you were a child, or in England, or earlier.
It's important, I can tell you.
Have you had, when you were more grown up, going girlfriends,
in school?
In school or in Oxford, or, in later in life?
Oxford, certainly. At school, no. None. My knowledge. At least I can't remember. I don't think so, no. No.
I mean, what do you...
I had no girlfriend at all, either Jewish or otherwise.
Not before Aline, you didn't have any girlfriend?
Oh, yes. I mean, that's a long way.
Yes.
Yeah. But, I mean, but that's what I'm talking about, the Poles.
Yes.
My friends at the Poles were going. Not Jews.
But boys.
Boys, yes. I remember exactly who they were. My greatest friend was somebody called Stevens, now dead. And my family knew him, liked him very much, and so on. He was sort of, etc. You see?
Yeah.
And he had another friend called, they're all going. The only Jewish friends I had, well, I knew three of them, four.
A shalit was there?
No shalit symbol. There's no shalit symbol, my dear. There was Sasha Goldberg, but he's not a friend, he's older. I knew him.
Yes.
He was at least about 3 years older than me.
Yes.
Very nice man.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
Except a nice man, Alexander Goldberg.
Yes, I liked him.
And he was the son of these, eminent father and so on.
Who's son of...
The two Goldbergs, one of the brothers.
Ah, he was son of the...
The one who bought his site, where the university stands.
Really?
On Scopus.
I didn't
know. Two Russian Zionists.
Yes, one was I.L. Goldberg.
One was Yitzhak.
Yes.
And the other was some of the other brothers.
Yes.
The rich brothers in Russia.
Yes.
Devoted Zionists.
And deported.
In 1905, yes. 6.
Yes.
Those years. You see?
Yeah, I know.
Yitzhak Goldberg and... His brother, I can't remember which this
yes,
one. But they were very educated.
Yes.
And they spoke Hebrew beautifully by long before the First World War.
Yes.
And they were one of these early Zionist zealots, perfectly civilized people,
yes.
Two rich brothers, and one of them certainly bought the site before 1914, on which the university stands.
Yes.
Then they emigrated to Palestine and Shobet.
Yes. And bought the very planted. A huge orchard. Of
that kind of thing.
Yes, I mean, the whole room of the gun is built
from
the
best Zionists of the world. The best Zionists of the world. There's nothing wrong with them at all.
Yes.
They're perfectly decent people,
yes.
In addition to everything.
Yes, like the good old Russian family.
Yes, exactly. You see? Goldberg,
yeah.
Yes. And
he was educated in England.
Sasha's mother was a rather grand lady to meet. She could have been titled figure. Very Russian. Not very Jewish.
Yes.
So I knew him because he asked me to lunch with me. They would suppose he knew where I was and so on. I mean, knew him, but you know, my friends were mostly Gentiles. I had three Jewish friends. One was half friend. One was Halpern, I told you, son of York, was only half Jewish. In fact, was his wife. You know the story Shaila told me, which I think is so marvelous. When he married his English wife, English German lady, there was a Zionist society in Obruisk somewhere, sent a telegram to the central office in Petersburg saying, we hear that Galpern has married Goya. What is to be done?
Now,
anyway. He was one, and of course the Rettinghausen was the other.
Ah, he went to St. Paul's.
Exactly the same time as I, in my exact temperature.
I see.
He might naturally knew the roles in the same form and so on. In those days he was a very German, violent anti-Zionist.
In the St. Paul days?
Mm-hmm. His father was.
Yeah.
His father was a Times correspondent in Munich before the First World War. Grandfather came from Frankfurt. It's as good a family as the Rothschilds.
From an Orthodox family or from a liberal? Orthodox.
Not there.
Not the typical Frankfurt, I think.
No, not at all. But his father was already born in England. And he went to Oxford. His father. And he was, because of the family roots in Frankfurt, because he went to Germany, became Times correspondent, was interned in Ruhleben during the First World War. The British subject, conceived of a violent hatred for everything German. His wife was the daughter of a rabbi in Heilbronn, a very, very German folk, and he divorced her because she's German. I'm telling you. And married Goya, who was converted to Judaism. He became a Sephardi.
Everything
happened. He is the father. In order to get away from the Germans. How did he do that? What he did, he went to Lauderdale, the Sephardi synagogue, and his rabbi was Rabbi Gagin.
Yes, Gagin.
And he married him to his Goyish wife, and he used to listen to gramophone records. He was a bookseller. The rare books. Yeah. Max Brothers, which was a great firm. His greatest friend was King Manuel of Portugal.
Emmanuel?
King Manuel of Portugal.
Yes.
Who lived in England and bought books. Yes. And when he came to Oxford.
And the book in Pearl Street was...
Yeah. In...
Pearl Street?
Not in Pearl, no. Broad Street.
It was in Broad Street?
Yes. He was a partner of, to some extent, of Rosenthal, Louisiana.
Ah, yes. But I think that then they moved to Pearl Street.
Maybe,
for a while,
maybe,
near the barber.
Maybe.
Yes.
Anyhow, maybe.
Yeah.
But anyway, father lived in Oxford then. But the father went to Queen's College, Oxford, so did the son. And at that period, he was pious, not super pious, but not terrific, but still pious enough. Because his mother was a rabbi's daughter, and the father didn't live with him. He did to begin with, but by 24, he must have left. 24, 25. He was one friend. He had an uncle who, his father's uncle, the jeweler in Paris, who I still knew, who went to the first performance of Carmen. He gave me a description of it. He used to supply jewelry to Princess Murat in Paris. Typical German, Jewish family in Paris, Germany, cultivated kind, bourgeoisie. Exactly the kind of family from which Offenbach or Halevi or all these French Jews sprang. Alsace really, but except they came from Frankfurt.
Yeah.
No. And that's one friend, and the other was, of course, Marmorstein.
Emil Marmorstein?
Emil Marmorstein.
He was so with you in St. Paul's?
My exact temporary.
Hunter. I met him, yes?
Certainly. He was...
He ought to be a very interesting character. I mean...
He's still alive. I don't know if he is. Suppose he is.
I don't know.
He must be my age.
I don't... haven't read some... I mean, I used to read...
He was super pious, of course. Because his father was.
Yeah. He was a good Baptist lawyer.
More than that.
Even more
fanatical.
Yes.
His father was a very distinguished Hebrew scholar in Jews College. In those days, Jews College was a seat of learning, which it no longer is. The head of it was a man called Büchler, who came from Budapest. And there was Marmorstein, also came from Budapest.
Yes.
And that was very solid learning, around 1900.
Yes.
There was a man called Dushinsky, whose son I also knew.
The rabbi Dushinsky?
Thought he was the rabbi.
Ah,
Dushinsky,
but
I mean, it's a Hungarian family.
Here in London?
The father was a property developer or something.
Ah, no, but there was a Dushinsky...
It's a Hungarian Jewish family.
Yes, yes. There was also a rabbi, yes.
And my contemporary is now called Yuchin, and the idea of solicitor. These were the pious Jews, I suppose. The pious Jews. Then there were less pious Jews, and I also knew. They were, in fact, German Jews of a kind of... B'nai B'rit type. And... somebody called Benzinger, somebody called Schwab, all kinds of Indian order. There were no Russian Jews. There was Max Beloff after me, but that was 4 years later. Now, Marmorstein was, in those days, extremely promiscuous. He used to go to bed with girls. Was talked nothing but sex. Obsessed by sex. He was amusing. He was read Hungarian writers of the 19th century. Yokai, gallant stories about Hungarian officers around 1840, 1850. It was extremely amusing, immoral to a degree, I mean, but in schoolboy sense. Always dirty stories, somewhat homosexual, but not very, but mainly girls. And he was a huge, great, big, huge man.
Yes.
You know, enormous. It wasn't particularly emphasized, it didn't mean anything then.
Later he was
there. Do I not know? You needn't tell me who is he, but that I'll tell you. But he was always eccentric. Holes. That's the point, you see. Something irregular there was. He was not at all like his father, but his great friend was Gastus, one of Gastus' sons, who was also a bogus Hebrew scholar, Theodogast.
Yeah.
Theodogast was a faux scholar in America, of course.
Yeah.
Was extremely brilliant and very superficial, and rather a crook, like his father. The Chacham was also not a very solid scholar, but he was a very interesting personality, of course, the old Chacham Gastus, Moses. And his part in the history of Zionism is quite interesting.
Oh, yes.
You see? But anyway, Emil Mandelstein then went to teach in Agudah school. No, his Alliance Israelite school.
Alliance Israelite in Baghdad.
In Baghdad. That's when it all began.
Yes.
That's when he became addicted to the real Jews and so the real sort of thing. Well, he was not a Sephardi himself.
Yes.
And that's when he gradually developed tremendous hatred of Zionism, and in a sense even a kind of anti-Semitism of a sort. And that's when the BBC used him, he became the Arab expert, all those things.
Yes. He by the way, wrote the...
I never saw him again.
Ah, you never saw him?
Not since... he has a brother called Bruno, who is a respectable Jew in Jewish college, who is a sort of Jewish bourgeois, gives money to Jewish causes, I think it's a solicitor or something like that.
Now,
he's ordinary, sort of respectful helps to Jewish bourgeois.
I'll tell you, I think that I'm not exaggerating if I'm saying that he was for years, or maybe to this day, the mentor of Eli Kattur.
Really?
Now, I don't know he might have been his teacher in Baghdad, or it's his anti-nationalism, anti-Zionism. I mean, read Marmoset's Kaduri, Marmoset articles, you can see the context
of course.
Kaduri admires.
Of course.
To this day.
For what? For?
For his learning. His impact on Kaeli's thought comes from Marmoset's.
He was never learned. Never.
But, I mean.
He was brought up in a learned atmosphere.
Yes.
He's brought up in a kind of professorial atmosphere.
And
that is correct.
He could pave the way for a young man like Eli Kattur to establish anti-nationalism.
He knew what was what.
Yeah. I learned from Marmoset one thing, I must say. The first...
Where did you learn?
I met him once in Bourgeois, but no, I read his articles. He would write in the International Affairs, book review, and sometimes articles. In the 50s, late 40s and 50s.
What about?
About the Middle East.
Quite good.
Interesting. But the article that I shall always remember is, his was the first article that really explained me what was the Haredim in Jerusalem. He gave a whole historical survey.
You would know about that.
And that was very clear, and for the first time.
This is the real Jews.
And but the whole old splinters, and it was very interesting. And it's interesting that the International Affairs has published it, by the way. I mean, but I think that to this day it's the clearest description of the genesis of the Haredim.
No element of that when you go on. Was not much good at school. I don't know what kind of... Where did you go to after Oxford? I mean after...
Baghdad?
No, after school.
I don't know.
Did he go to university at all?
I don't know. When he went to Baghdad in the 30s.
Look, he would have been finished in 28.
St. Paul's. So you want to... I mean, I don't know, but one can see easily.
I'd love to know. Did he go to London University? Where did he go?
I don't know.
He was called. I lost sight of him then.
I mean, if he went to be a teacher in Allianz, he ought to have a certain degree, either of teacher's college,
something,
or maybe Jewish studies. I mean, maybe
more like
yeah. But Why should his parents send him to St. Paul's and not to a yeshiva or to a chesed?
Oh, because that was common. So is Dushinsky. These parents, Hungarian Union, knew what was what. They wanted proper education for their children. There was no question of sending to yeshiva. Or to give them pure Jewish degree. That didn't happen. If some of them, I mean, people of a certain degree of education did not in the 20s dream of sending their children to Jewish schools. They may have been done by people in the East End of London. But never by these middle-class Jews, whatever they were. I don't think his father was super pious. Naturally, a teacher in Jewish college, he kept to the Jewish laws, but he was not a fanatic.
He became a sort of Arab scholar. I mean, he knew Arabic well.
Well, but did he know it before he went to Baghdad?
That I don't know. That I don't know, but I can check if there is.
His life would be interesting. I don't. Then the BBC, of course.
Yes, in the BBC, in overseas. And then I met him en passant. I mean, I don't know him. But
he grew a beard, didn't he?
Yes, and he was very short.
Always was short.
And untidy.
Always.
And to this day, Ellie would remind him in
that. I believe you.
I know.
Yes, I believe you.
Yes.
This minute.
Yes, I know.
Right, good.
That's fine. So.
Ben Carver. That's quite amusing.
Yes. No, it was all right. I mean, yes.
Dr. Dushinsky and Emil. Dushinsky and Marmorstein were the two pious Jews, I suppose. They were contemporaries. One became a left wing citizen. Left wing. And the other remained what became what you know what, but he was always regarded as extremely eccentric. And his friends, I suppose, were not Jews. Not Jews.
But I started while asking you, if
he used to tell me scandalous stories about the sexual goings on of Dr. Gaster's, of Moses' daughters. That is for sure.
Which is rather common in those circles.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And, but I mean the sort of sexual proclivities of pious Jews. Yes.
Now, shall we stop?
721. All right.